Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Feeling lucky? You should be. Meet the new Lucky One Sweet Tea from Miss Peaches, the vodka drink that's positively doing good. Made with real tea and real vodka, non-carbonated, 100 calories. And here's the scoop. Their new sweet tea is the only vodka-based sweet tea on the market. Simple ingredients in a smooth, full flavor that makes it taste just like the real sweet tea. Best part? Every can helps rescue dogs find their forever homes as they work to a goal of donating $1 million to dog rescues in 2026. So if you love true sweet tea, this one's a no-brainer. Pick up a Lucky One sweet tea today and give back one can at a time.
To infinity and beyond!
The Lord tells me he can get me out of this mess, but he's pretty sure you're fucked.
This is why you fail.
You can't handle the truth!
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
Say hello to my little friend!
You'll shoot your eye out, kid.
Say what again! Say what again! I dare you! I double dare you, motherfucker! Say what one more goddamn time!
What? We've got here is failure to communicate.
Roads? Where we're going, we don't need roads.
Are you not entertained? Are you not entertained?
He's our son.
Happy birthday, Polly. Oh,
no, I got his son. Well, how's the Joker, baby?
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 193. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Trill Ballins. It is it's a Sunday night. We're going to be talking Ocean's 12 tonight, the second in the Ocean's series, not counting the original, which was a complete pile of trash. The original is worse than 12. Let me make that very clear. But this one definitely has plenty of issues.
You mean the Rat Pack one?
The Rat Pack one is, it is really bad.
Probably racist.
It's a really bad movie.
We're going to steal this stuff.
That's a good Frank Sinatra.
They don't even actually get any of the money because I believe, if I do recall, the last scene of the movie. Yes, the last scene of the movie, the Frank Sinatra squad, they have the money left in a coffin of one of the members who had died during the heist or something, and the person who owns like the funeral home convinces the widow to cremate him. And so they realize in the middle of this that all the money has been burned along with the body. And then the end of the movie is them walking out of the funeral home, and that's the movie. That's just it.
I like that.
That's unsatisfying.
Yeah, that's then they did a musical number.
Starts snapping down the street.
Sammy Davis Jr. is my favorite Rat Packer. Had a cameo in the 1960s Batman window cameo. What's going on with you guys?
Not much.
Yeah. Yeah. What, your teams play today?
Mine plays Monday night. So
nice. Yeah.
Yours playing now, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed we didn't want to record during the Chargers game, but recording during the Colts game.
I would have recorded during the Chargers one. We had some time.
I mean, friends, you know, Jeff.
I mean,
Jeff,
I almost would have. I almost rather record. We did because the Chargers played
this
like
is,
fucking
this,
dog
this
shit.
This is what you get when Ken Jack says something about the Chargers like last week and you reply with, I don't really care.
I don't
care. That's what happens.
I don't care. Colts are going to get Yokozuna'd by the Chiefs. Yeah, it's going
to
be like
a real one.
Playoff game last year, except worse. So
what about non-football stuff? Anything happening? Anything exciting?
I had the Impossible Whopper. I liked it.
Oh, that's something.
It's pretty good. So like me and my, they do this deal where like it's $7 and they give you a Whopper and an Impossible Whopper for only $7 and you taste test it. So I had my roommate give it to me on a plate, did two separate ones and didn't tell me which is which. You could tell which is which just by looking at it, but the taste was very, very similar. I'll say that.
Like I've heard no that difference. Though. I've heard from people who don't eat meat that they actually don't like the Impossible stuff because it tastes so much like meat. I've had multiple people tell me that. They're like, it's almost like it's just too freaky, I guess. I don't know. They said they don't like the Impossible stuff because it's like, I don't eat meat. Like, I don't really want this.
I understand.
You can check it out. I need to check it out. I can't say that I've made the Burger King a destination too many times in recent history, just because of my stomach issues. And typically what happens after that is 3 days of agony. But that's not on the restaurant. That's just the way I live now at 35 years old. So maybe if I eat Impossible Whoppers, all that will go away. Maybe it doesn't have as much fat in it. And if I get, instead of the regular fries, I get the chicken fries, which instead of all the gluten just has chicken, I guess I'll be okay.
Chicken fries are underrated.
I don't think I can vibe with Burger King chicken after watching Morgan Spurlock fuck that chicken from Burger King and Super Size Me too. That was tough.
He does do that. People forget. If you forgot about our episode from 3 days ago, he does finger fuck the chicken. It was
a tough scene. Should have been rated R.
Delightful scene.
Yeah. I went out and I bought some expensive lotion this weekend. It smells really nice.
You're treating yourself?
Wow.
Yeah, it's like smell lotion. It's not for anything else, but it's good. It's like rum. That's the name of the flavor. Or the scent, I guess I should say. I'm not going to eat the lotion. Malin and Goetz. It's expensive. It's
Malin and Goetz. That is the hair product I use.
Same here.
Malin and Goetz. That's right. That's Malin and Goetz.
Malin Goetz.
Nice lady. Yeah, but it smells really nice. I was like, I'm gonna be a nice smelling guy from now on. So I'm gonna start lotioning my hands and myself a little bit better.
I believe you.
Okay.
You blast one off with it yet?
No, not yet, man.
Gotta give it a try. Let me know how it goes. I'm always open to recommendations.
No, dude, just some Head and Shoulders in the shower. It'll be fine. Get done quick enough. It doesn't irritate it.
5-in-1 body wash to bring up with it. That's patient zero right there. 5-in-1 body wash.
But you know the people. Did you ever see there's an SNL, or like it was like a fake commercial for like the first shampoo you can do that with? It was like a 3-in-1 shampoo conditioner and that
dick lotion. I like that idea. We should patent it. We'll get there eventually.
That's it. They just have those just free samples in college dorms all over.
Yeah, we can have like the Bang Energy girls, except it's just guys handing, really gross looking guys handing out 5-in-1 lotion or 3-in-1 lotion.
Head, shoulders, and dick.
head, shoulders, and head.
Okay. Oh, that's good, man. That's a good start. What else did I buy this weekend? I don't really know.
Oh, I got that toasted cheddar chalupa.
That is good.
Taco Bell as well. This is a really bad fast food weekend for me.
Did you get the chicken or did you get the beef?
I got the beef.
Okay, because the beef I thought was okay. The chicken one was – so if you go to the cantinas, you got to make edits. And so what I do is I got the chicken, the toasted cheddar chalupa. I'm not a big sour cream guy, so I took off the sour cream and I replaced it with Taco Bell's creamy jalapeno sauce. Then I just – everything else was the same, lettuce, tomatoes, chicken. It's a very good product that actually stays crispy too.
Pretty cheese too. It's like $3.
Yeah, it's crunchy. It's good stuff.
I respect that. It's good. That and a quesarito, which I didn't eat and then ate it at, I think, 10 a.m. this morning.
Felt that's gross. Tough. Yeah, that's a tough move.
Threw it in the toaster oven, got it nice and warm. Oh, man, it tasted so good at the time, but I just felt like shit for the rest of the day.
Didn't you go out last night? Or wait, you stayed in?
No, I didn't go out. Yeah, stayed in, got fast food.
Yeah. You haven't been going out. I feel like you guys haven't been going out a lot recently.
I'm going through some severe medical issues, my friend. I do not think it is conducive to my current situation.
Well, I was gonna say, like, you're eating a lot of fast food this weekend either means you got a positive diagnosis or a positive prognosis or a negative one this week. So
it was mostly I had to fast all day Friday and then didn't eat shitty on Friday. And then Saturday, I was like, you know what? I earned this. I can eat something shitty today. So I got Taco Bell and then followed it up with the Impossible Whopper today. I didn't eat the regular Whopper. Regular Whopper's still in the fridge. I'll get there eventually.
So, Kendrick, you also had an incident on Friday when you attempted to go see Joker.
Oh, yeah. So,
did you do?
No, it was much better than that. So I went to go see...
you poop your pants?
Did not.
In the theater.
Did not shit my doo-doo ass at Joker. I went to Joker at like a 12:50 showing. And the 34th Street one, And I go in there, I get in about an hour and a half into the movie. It's like an empty theater. This guy comes in and he just sits two seats away from me. Again, like totally empty theater. It's an hour and a half in. And he just takes his backpack off, puts it on his lap, and starts looking around really nervously. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm just sitting there and I'm like, all right, if this guy, I'm going to leave in like 5 minutes. And then like, he just sits there and he gets up and leaves after 5 minutes. And then I'm like, all right, well, he's coming back and doing something. So I'm leaving. So I had to leave and then I had to rewatch it again today. So that's the situation we're at in this wonderful country. So thanks, media. Having to
restart the movie an hour and a half in. But that's, dude, it's funny you say, so you went, you can't go. I'm sorry. I know you went close to work, but if you're in New York, you just can't attend the movie theaters in Times Square or by Penn Station because on, I think, opening night, I don't know when this was.
Yeah, 42nd Street, yeah.
The Times Square Theater, Manhattan Times Square Theater, one of the two of them, a man was clapping loudly, yelling and cheering during any of the Joker scenes that involve violence, screaming, and people told him to shut up, and then people started leaving, and as they left, he began spitting on them. Apparently, he was just drunk and being an asshole because they security came and got him, and there's nothing, like, he wasn't going to do anything or anything. He's just being a piece of shit. Yeah, that's good stuff. Glad people are definitely not piles of trash.
Who was the guy that, like, restrained? There's the guy that restrained him, and they had a funny name. He had a funny name. He's like, my name is V, like Valentine or something. There's a really good quote on it, but I forget what it was. So you can find it later.
Just like, come on, don't be an asshole.
Don't be an asshole. That goes for any movie ever. Just don't be an asshole.
Yeah, I'll be an interesting one to talk about this week because
We are going to review it on Thursday with special guest Robbie Fox. So looking forward to it.
Well, I kind of feel like it came out and maybe I'm just not paying attention. Everybody was like, okay, we already talked about it for the 3 weeks ago. We already talked about it. So
I think that was my favorite tweet on the whole subject was just one person that said, what do you call it? I just finished my 4,000 word piece on Joker. Can't wait to see it.
Yeah. Who was it? I had it. Ben Sixsmith, I guess. Someone retweeted it. Someone funny, but it said, just finished my 8,000 word review of the Joker. Can't wait to see the film. And that, I mean, that really does. You're right. That sums up just about everything piece on it. I have a lot to say on it. I'm going to do a written review, but I will hold all spoiler stuff for when we talk about it on the pod, but there's a lot to talk about, and I don't think it's the part where people are trying to make it seem is worth talking about. The political stuff, all that. I think just talking about the character and the elements of the story itself are the interesting thing. I don't want to say anymore because I don't want to spoil anything because I know some people haven't seen it yet. But there are interesting things to talk about, both character-wise and just about the movie as a whole and how people are perceiving it. So there will be a lot to discuss and get into. Looking forward to that.
Joker, baby.
The Joker.
You think he went with his friends and like bragged about his video to people?
Nah, he's probably a big Heath Ledger guy. He was just disgusted by them rebooting the Joker character so soon, 11 years after Heath Ledger. His turn, he probably couldn't stomach it.
The real disgusting outrage was there was a Joker meme going around of all the Jokers in a car together. Joker, you had Joaquin Phoenix Joker, Jack Nicholson Joker, and the fourth Joker they decided to use was Leto and not Cesar Romero. And people were like, what the fuck is this shit? Cesar Romero, by the way, in Ocean's 11, the original one.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But they're like, what the fuck?
Well, that's what happens when you have like a 17-year-old who makes shit like that. That's who those memes appeal to.
True.
I mean, like the political stuff aside, like there is this like this growing trend of like isolationism. Sorry, that I think the Joker character appeals to that. And then for some reason, the Joker that just wanted to like have flowers that shoot out sleep gas at Batman in tights. Doesn't appeal to those kids, so who knows?
Well, let's not do it now. We got to think of a really good way. I may have everyone figure out a good way to describe the Jared Leto Joker and like what he is, like who he thinks he is as a person. Because when you break down all the Jokers, his sticks out so much; it's incredible. It was such a bad character.
I think that Hot Topic's not allowed because that's
true. Just,
that's lazy. Like I always say that though. I say it's a Hot Topic Joker. I think it was more of a, I think it was trying to appeal to like the, it was like the EDM Joker.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah.
So he's the ass eating EDM Joker.
Trying to, was a little EDM.
Yeah. Trying to, it had Skrillex in it. And he, you know, was just trying to appeal to that, you know, 20, if you're 22 in 2016, like that was the Joker they were trying, that they were trying to speak to you with.
Can we get James to do Australian Joker next time he's on?
Yeah, we can definitely get him to do it. Yeah. We're going to have him back on, but I want to do something not comic books with him. I feel like.
Okay.
We're gonna do Sonic with him, but that movie just isn't coming out now until next year.
So. Freaking 6 month delay is absurd.
Yeah,
Sonic.
Might get a trailer soon. There's a chance that we talk about trailers for Kong vs. Godzilla and Sonic later in the week. Not Star Wars. The Rise of Skywalker trailer will not be dropping during Monday Night Football this week. It would have been announced already. I mean, obviously there's a 0.1% chance out of nowhere they drop it, but it will be Monday Night Football. If all things hold to form, and it'll probably be either next week or the week after. So looking forward to that. Other than that, I got nothing. Joker later in the week, but today Ocean's 12. I guess we'll get in the news. But first, this episode brought to you in part by SeatGeek. We say it all the time, SeatGeek. It takes up some space on our phones. We have it, and it's the best way to find and shop for any type of ticket, sporting events, theater, concerts. Like I said, I got mine recently, going to the Browns game next Sunday. Excited for that. Can be anything. Doesn't have to be football. SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching multiple ticket sites to compare prices and find amazing deals. And you get you the most bang for your buck. SeatGeek grades every ticket based on value to help you immediately identify the best seats that fit your budget. Find the best seats at anything from Jeff Dunham to Dude Perfect. We've gone over those before. Dude Perfect Live. We got to get there one day. Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket. From sports and concerts, comedy. That's right, stand-up comedy. And theater. Best of all, if you're listening, you get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LIGHTS, L-I-G-H-T-S, today. Promo code LIGHTS, L-I-G-H-T-S, for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. Okay, let's get into it. First up, 1917 from Sam Mendes. This movie getting a ton of buzz. This movie comes out on Christmas. It has some Oscar buzz. Sam Mendes, fantastic director. Most recently did Spectre and Skyfall. Spectre, obviously a bit of a letdown, but Skyfall, Revolutionary Road, Jarhead, Road to Perdition, American Beauty. Sam Mendes knows how to make some movies, and this one has, like I said, a lot of buzz. Mark Strong in it, Colin Firth, Benedict Cumberbatch. It's a World War I movie, which, you know, has Ken Jack, you very excited. Trailer looked great. This movie is, it's not like a true long take one shot, right? It's very similar to that of Alejandro Giannarritu's Birdman and The Revenant, where it is shot to look like one long continuous take, which is fucking awesome. Very cool.
Yeah. Kenjack's been playing Battlefield 1.
Yeah.
Isn't that the World
War? It is World War 1, yeah.
Yeah. Or the alternate history, because don't they have like things that didn't exist at the time? And there's
like attachments to guns and shit that I'm sure didn't actually exist, but I wouldn't call alternate history.
Laser sights on the Garland M1. Gun probably wasn't even around. I don't know. Yeah.
Like a fucking holographic sight on a bolt-action Swahili rifle or something. Yeah, but no, it's definitely not alternate history, but it is fun. And yeah, this trailer looks awesome. Love Sam Mendes. Roger Deakins, obviously one of the best cinematographers in the business. And I'm very interested in the one-shot style. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Really curious to see how it kind of like works its way out. And apparently it's going to shadow like the two kid characters, one of which is played by the guy who played Tommen in Game of Thrones. And I think he's pretty strong. Like a limited role in Game of Thrones, but I think he was kind of good in what he was in, like whatever you wanted to define the role as, like very confused child, which kind of think fits into the same sort of role in World War One, where there were a lot of confused kids that like lied about their age to get into the war and all that. So very, very pumped to see this.
Or they just took him.
That too.
Oh, you're 15. Okay, we need you.
Sure.
Yeah, brutal. I mean, brutal war. World War One, obviously, is. Kinjak said it before. It's like. In terms of what gets implemented in a pop culture, World War II dominates. So it's nice to get something that's weighted more towards the First World War, which is, I think, probably one that would lend itself. And I'm just talking out my ass here, but if I'm thinking about like a one take style, just in terms of confusion and what I know about like things on the, you know, movies that have had like trench warfare and all those World War One style of combat scenes. I think it lends itself well to that. And the trailer obviously looks beautiful, and Freaky Deaky's in on it. So there's really nothing to. I mean, there's no in terms of like bad things to say about this movie. Like I really don't have anything.
Yeah, it's just it comes down to you just hope that the story is
good.
Yeah. Makes well the story services the technical side of things, because obviously the technical aspect of like the one shot thing is amazing, but it doesn't totally make a movie great. Like The Revenant, I don't love The Revenant, even though it looks unreal. Birdman, on the other hand, I love, because it combines a techno element with a story that I really enjoyed. Speaking of which, we are reviewing not this week but next week Gemini Man, finally. And that is one where the technical side of things is not living, or excuse me, the story is not living up to the technical side of things. I saw another review. This is from Disgusting Film. And this summed up the early reviews great. Gemini Man unfortunately feels more like a tech project rather than a layered film. That's a pretty sounds damning right. review.
We talked about that, right? Like kind of thought that's what it was going to be like.
Yeah.
Like, so, cool facial rec stuff, but not much else.
That's it's mostly ambitious. That's what people are saying mostly. So you hope that's not the case with 1917. You hope that it doesn't just rely on like the look of the movie to service it. I don't think it will, but if we're playing devil's advocate, we're trying to say what could a negative be here. That, I guess, might be it.
It's like a Saving Private Ryan type story in World War One. I like it. I'm a fan.
I think just with these war movies, you don't necessarily – I mean, the stories don't always have to be as strong as – a different type of movie, right? Because a lot of them are pretty self-contained in the current moment or the current time, and they're about immediate survival and whatnot. So I don't know. It may have that to its benefit, but I did. It's something like Gemini Man that doesn't surprise me at all. So
this is a
ambitious project. Not very good, but ambitious.
This 1917 premise, by the way, just in case you want to know, at the height of the First World War during spring 1917 in northern France, two British soldiers, Schofield and Blake, are given a seemingly impossible mission to deliver a message which will warn of an ambush during one of the skirmishes soon after the German retreat to the Hindenburg Line during Operation Albrecht. The two recruits race against time, crossing enemy territory to deliver the warning and keep a British battalion of 1,600 men, which includes Blake's own brother, from walking into a deadly trap. The pair must give their all to accomplish their mission by surviving the war to end all wars. I think it's going to be a pretty fucking tense movie based on trailer description and what you can expect. So looking forward to it. It's got Oscar buzz, too, which you love to hear.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that doesn't sound too heavy on story, but it sounds like very doable in terms of just enough of what you want out of it to go along with the visuals. But very buzzy. It does feel like one of those movies that's getting buzz, but it's also, I could see it not winning anything except for maybe being nominated for cinematography. But it does have a prestigious release date, December 25th. I mean, that's a big deal.
Yeah. The Christmas release is big. I don't know if it was ever moved up at all, but obviously that does signal that they want it in for award season, and that it is going to be something that does some damage, not just to the box office, but with people's perceptions of how good it is and how it can perform at the Oscars. So it's good stuff. Looking forward to it. Like the trailer, kind of surprised, didn't expect it. Moving on to another true story. This one, based on true events, this one much more of a true story, and that is the Richard Jewell movie. I thought it was called The Ballad of Richard Jewell, but apparently it's based on the book.
By Gordon Lightfoot.
American Nightmare, The Ballad of Richard Jewell. It's based on that book. Clint Eastwood directing. Leonardo DiCaprio and Jonah Hill actually also producing. I didn't know this. The project was announced in 2014 when Leo and Jonah Hill teamed to produce the film, with Hill set to play Jewell and Leonardo DiCaprio, the lawyer who helped Jewell navigate the media blitz. That's not the case anymore. They're not in the movie. Paul Walter Hauser plays Richard Jewell, who follows LCB. Shout out to him, a Twitter follower. Sam Rockwell plays his lawyer, Kathy Bates, John Hamm, Olivia Wilde, all in this. Chronicles the events of Richard Jewell's life after he discovered the plot that resulted in the Centennial Olympic Park bombing in 1996 in Atlanta. Despite having to evacuate civilians, Jewell was considered a suspect. Filming began in like July, and then the movie's just coming out in December. They moved up the release date too. So apparently it's good, apparently they have confidence that it will be good enough for award season. This does come out now back to back with Star Wars. Interesting move. Initially, 20th Century Fox had the movie, and then they were bought by Disney. They sold it off to Warner Brothers. I'm looking forward to it. I think the Richard Jewell story is incredibly fascinating, and I feel like it's not been lost with time, but it's not talked about enough. It's just a very bizarre, pretty sad, and just kind of crazy story, just from the events of what happened initially to how it all ended. Eastwood came out with a movie last Christmas by the name of The Mule, which was not very good. Also came out with the 1517 to Paris. Those were his first movies since Sully. But Eastwood's made plenty of good movies, so I'm not going to sit here and say I don't think it's going to be good, but it's got a lot of great actors who I like, and the story is the big thing for me. I'm incredibly intrigued by the story. If you don't know much about the Richard Jewell story, I suggest looking it up. I think there was a 30 for 30 on it, too. But it's a this I was intrigued by the first trailer a lot.
Kinjack, you've been going down the Richard Jewell story, our research rabbit hole. What can you tell us?
So I didn't know anything about this until I think you had brought it up when we talked about it on a podcast once, like a year ago or something.
Well, we did do an ad, full disclosure, where it's Richard Jewell for the company Jewel.
For Jewels. And I looked up a little bit about it then, but then I looked it up more after seeing the trailer, and it's just like a fucking wild hole. Like, what's it called? The actual bomber, like when he got caught, his brother sawed off his hand with a circular saw. And he's like, yeah, this is a message to the FBI. And then had to have it like reattached. And like the actual bomber was doing it for like all these weird like religious reasons and shit. It was really a deranged story that I feel like I knew, did not learn about this in school. Number one, absolutely never heard about really ever. Not even just the Jewel case, but I don't think I even like heard about the Atlanta bombing until I was like well into my 20s. And which I think is kind of absurd. But yeah, I don't know. There's just like a lot kind of going on with it. And very interested to see how our good boy Paul Walter Hauser does with it.
I don't think I think because the media messed this up so much that they don't tend to talk about it.
It sounds about right.
It's one of those things. It was what, 96. It was the Olympics here. It was a big moment. I mean, it was in Atlanta. It was at the home. It was at the footsteps of CNN. Right as I think that, you know, the 24-hour news cycle was it was in its salad years. And I think it's an example of one of those things where, you know, like he was vilified for, I don't know, I'm trying not to be too cynical here.
Sensationalist journalism.
Yeah. I think it's just, you know, it's all about eyeballs, right? Like, and it's everybody. It's the things are a better story when they're sensationalist. And I think that like, maybe they ran with that. But when I was a kid when this happened, I just remembered this from, like pretty much they're like, you knew there was a bomb that killed I think one person at the Olympics, but you didn't know much more about that than that. So it is something, you're right, that like, even though I would understand you not learning about it because it certainly isn't something that people discuss, but like when it's happening when you're 12 years old, it was a big news story at the time, but then after it happened it just wasn't really ever talked about.
Yeah, it sounds about right. I feel like I didn't learn about a lot of like weird shit that happened in the U.S. in the 90s and earlier late 80s, I would say. Like, I didn't learn about the Oklahoma City bombing until like college or like something like that. We didn't get taught it, rather. Like, I heard about it from my parents, but like, we didn't actually learn about it until super late, which feels weird.
This story is like, it's really fucked up for many reasons. I know he did pass away, like, I think 10 years ago.
Yeah,
but he sued NBC. He sued, I know, CNN, plenty of other places, trying to clear his name. The actual bomber was Eric Rudolph, who was captured like a while after. But I was pulling this up. This one I remember seeing in a CNN interview about him being falsely accused, is that when this all happened, like, he got destroyed in the media. I mean, destroyed. And I'm sure you're going to see it in the movie. But Jay Leno called him, like, he referenced the Unabomber and called him the Unidoofus. Like, in the middle of him being like accused of being the bomber and lying. And then they called his mom like the Unamama. It's a really fucked up story. It really is. It's a really sad and just kind of unfortunate story to hear. I know. I remember what was her position? She, Attorney General Janet Reno, I remember she was apologetic because I know the FBI leaked stuff to the media. Janet Reno famously also passed away, played by Will Ferrell in Janet Reno's Dance Party, a very funny SNL skit, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's tough. It's a tough story to read and to kind of go through because you just feel bad for the guy. And I'm looking forward to seeing it play out on the big screen and kind of having more attention to the story that, again, very fucked up. It's a messed up story and really unfortunate.
Yeah. Shout out to Richard Jewell, wrongfully framed king.
Was he brought in by the law enforcement as a suspect, or was it one of those things where the media, and I don't like when I say the media, I don't want to say like the media as a whole. I think there were, like, I'm looking at the civil cases, like Richard Jewell sued NBC. He sued the New York Post. He sued Cox Enterprises, which I think owned the Atlanta paper at the time. And then CNN settled with him at some point. So yeah, maybe I just need to learn more about it. I think I have questions that can't be answered on this podcast.
He was considered a suspect, and that was part of the leak with the FBI. But I think most of the damage people do, like most of everything that happened, especially his public image, were a result of the media kind of just assuming it was him and then treating it like it was him. And obviously, again, a good example, Jay Leno calling him the unit doofus, which is just... Ooh.
There was a good Jay Leno shout-out in Big Mouth, Jeff, you'd appreciate.
Did they shit all over Jay Leno?
Yeah, they said one of the people, the kids dresses up like Conan, and like police officers, like, yeah, what Jay Leno did to you was so fucked up, man.
I like that. Fuck Jay Leno. What a hack. What a fucking hack.
He's okay.
Hack. No, okay. I'm a Conan guy. You're not gonna sway my opinion on that.
Yeah, but like, look, what he did to Conan was pretty shit.
And Letterman,
but also Jay Leno has a lot of cars, and that's pretty neat.
that's a good
more
defense.
More cars than Conan, many would say.
And Jay Leno is just getting the shit beaten out of him by Letterman in the ratings until he had Hugh Grant on after Hugh Grant solicited prostitutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he had Hugh Grant on. And then his question was, what were you thinking? And he got a big laugh. And then from that moment on, I don't think Letterman ever recovered. And Jay Leno was the king of late night. Talk about a nostalgia trip just in terms like 1996, mid 90s, the media and like late night television. Yeah, Jay Leno, every other joke. I mean, like, you know, he called him the unit doofus. But think about it, this was a hard time for Jay Leno because the O.J. Simpson stuff had just died down. So he couldn't make O.J. Simpson jokes that much anymore. And the Clinton Lewinsky stuff was about to kick up. So he didn't have that yet. This was probably Jay Leno's darkest period.
Oh, yeah, I guess we feel bad for Jay Leno now.
No, we don't.
And all 500 of his cars. No, I don't.
Oh yeah,
he's really down and out, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, whatever. Delino's doing okay. I called him the other day; he's fine.
So, did you catch this game?
I texted him like, "Do you hear about this? Do you see about this?" Jay Leno would like to FaceTime. Oh no, Jay, come on!
I'm busy, Jay. Sorry, I just missed this. My bad.
The camera's just on his chin.
You can't see his face.
He's just his chin.
He takes a selfie. If when he accidentally opens the front camera, just looks like he's fucking taking a dick pic because it's just his bottom chin.
The actual bomber was Eric Rudolph, and I didn't realize Eric Rudolph. I forgot he was captured not until 2003.
He was hiding out in the Appalachians or something, right?
Really,
it's a crazy fucking story. Yeah,
he's like surviving eating like out of a dumpster.
Yeah,
stuff. I mean that like.
Again, this is one of those stories that, like, think about that. It's just because of the time it happened. Granted, news media was becoming more popular, but there's news footage or from the Olympics where you can, like, hear the bomb go off in the background. Like, it's a bombing. Guy wasn't caught for 7 years. It's actually insane that there wasn't really a movie made about this until now. Especially think about it. Clint Eastwood made a movie about Sully. That had happened not that long before. I mean, there was a story about the Boston Marathon. I mean, like what felt like minutes after it happened it took 23 years.
Sully was not a big deal, probably, compared to the Boston bombing. I mean, nobody died.
Tinfoil hat, though. I think we tend not to talk about it because it essentially was a terrorist attack at an Olympics hosted in the United States. And that is generally a bad look. And so Yeah, it just hasn't been covered for those.
Hey, it took the Munich one for a long time to get a movie. Pretty decent movie though. Eric Bana.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Some other people, I think. Not bad.
Yep. Yep. So yeah, that's the Ballad of Richard Jewell. Just called Richard Jewell. Now I'm going to probably continue to be calling it the Ballad of Richard Jewell. That's what it is in my head. But a good trailer. I'm looking forward to it. And it's just a great cast. Fantastic cast. You give me Sam Rockwell, I'm probably going to watch it no matter what it is. Moving on. This is a pretty boring one, but I guess we got to talk about it because James Bond, No Time to Die. I honestly, they released a new poster. I forgot what they called the movie until I saw the poster. I was thinking about it the other day and I didn't have my phone on me. I'm like, what's the name of the Bond movie? Couldn't think about it. I just gave up.
No Bond 25.
Die.
It is. It's Bond 25. Bond it should 25. Be. It should be Bond. That's a problem. They waited too fucking long to give the title out. It should have just been Bond 25 from the get-go. Because it was ingrained in our head. They're like, we're going to be doing some big reveals about Bond 25. It's like, just tell us what the title is. This poster is boring. There's been no trailers. It comes out in April. I'm kind of surprised by the marketing of...
But it is kind of quite early to start the marketing. I'm surprised. Well, maybe I'm not considering Star Wars is coming out, but I thought this would have been a prime candidate for them to try to get it into November of this year. Because I remember that's when Skyfall came out. And I think that's when Spectre came out. I feel like November's a Bond time. Like that's a good Bondy time to watch a movie, like right around Thanksgiving. So it is weird this one's coming out in April, but it might be too early to really start the marketing off in earnest. The poster looks like shit. The font looks like shit. Like Daniel Craig looks good, but I go over to the Taylor Swift Reddit to kind of check up every now and then, and I'm more interested in the way that community talks about Taylor Swift than I am anything, because I'm just a big fan of internet communities and how they function. And they'll do some art where they'll just take a picture of Taylor and put some lyrics on the picture of Taylor, and then everybody will compliment that person in that thread, like, this is beautiful. It's like that. They just took a picture of Daniel Craig and then they put the name of the movie on top of it. And we're supposed to be like the Taylor Swift Reddit posters and be like, oh, this is great. Thank you so much.
It does look like shit. It looks like the person just like ripped the font or essentially the logo directly from the first trailer and just looked up Daniel Craig PNG on Google Images, threw the two together. Looked like fucking
Daniel Craig Getty Images.
Yeah. PNG, I mean, threw it all in.
I think it's an actual picture, but if you look at the top of his hair, it does look a little bit like it was cut out.
Right?
It looks mildly cropped.
Just an awful, awful poster. Especially the end of the Daniel Craig era, you think they would go to bigger heights for this last poster.
I mean, it was James Bond Day, and this was the best they could give people.
Well, the
true bondage hours.
The people want to see Rami Malek, what he looks like in this movie, okay? That's what we want to see now, right?
All right, probably going to look like Rami Malek.
No, but you think
they're not going to make him blonde like Bardem?
You don't think he's going to have some weird affectation or something like a scar in his face?
If they did anything crazy to him, that would be dumb, in my opinion. They didn't let him be.
I don't disagree with that, but I would be shocked. What if he had a goatee?
No, fuck no. That'd be so weird.
They dusted off his Freddy mustache and just put it around his whole face.
I wonder if he looks like he shaves every single morning, but I wonder if he's ever had facial hair. Rami Malek beard.
I don't know, dude. He's one smooth boy. I saw him on.
Oh boy, I don't like this.
I think it was. I think it was Colbert. Because I texted you guys that night, I was watching Colbert, and I'm like, how miserable do you think Colbert is that he has to do this show? And he had Rami Malek on, and he told a show where him and Daniel Craig were filming a scene together for James Bond. And it was a rather intense scene, and at the end, when they both nailed it, Daniel Craig gave him a kiss. And then Rami Malek said to Daniel Craig, does this make me a Bond girl now? And then that got a big laugh from the audience. And I'm just like, the stories that they tell in these late night shows are so fucking made up. Uh-huh. That did not happen.
Absolutely not. I feel like Daniel Craig is so blunt about stuff that if he were to be challenged on that, if he went on Colbert, he would just say yeah, that never happened. Like straight up. He would not even be polite about it.
I don't think Daniel Craig knows who Rami Malek is right now.
Probably not, no.
Who?
Who the fuck's that?
He only knows he only cares enough to know three people from Hollywood, and one is Rachel Weisz.
Mm-hmm. 100%. He knows him and like try to think of anyone else he's been like a
friend. Bardem. Like he knows Bardem.
Just gonna say Jeffrey Wright only because Felix whatever has been in every James Bond movie for 5 minutes.
Ew, Mr. Bond, the CIA has a proposition for you. He only knows Rachel Weisz, Channing Tatum, and Channing Tatum. Logan Lucky, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Adam Driver.
Yeah,
his and West Virginia accent was phenomenal. By the way, we don't talk about that enough.
That's the buzz about Knives Out.
Mm-hmm. I like the great Southern
people
accent.
Like Knives Out.
Yeah, I think I'll get excited about this movie in due time.
There should be a trailer. Like it's 6 months out though. Like I know you say it's a little early, but like there should be a teaser. There should be something.
We have the BTS thing. They did the behind the scenes thing that they put out that was like 2 minutes long or whatever. They showed all like the action sequences. It was like him walking around with a spear gun, I think. But like it wasn't really a good teaser. It was just like, yeah, here, look, it's 5 minutes of Daniel Craig running around with a spear gun. Isn't that sick? And I'm like, yeah. Like, can we have a trailer though?
Like, he got very sad at the end of filming on set. He was very
Craig or Malik?
Daniel Craig. He was very emotional.
Yeah, because he didn't know anybody on the fucking cast.
Malik comes up to me. He's like, "It was a pleasure working with you." And he's like, "Yeah, can you get me like a coffee, two sugars?"
I must admit, I should have taken more time to actually meet people in the James Bond family.
Did they show Bardem as like the blonde bad guy in Skyfall's trailer? I don't think they revealed him, or did they?
I think they did.
I'm gonna watch the trailer now, but continue.
Because the reveal was when he takes out his teeth.
Oh, the teeth was so gross. That was
Rami Malek with a beard looks like a rehearsal stand-in for Jonah on Superstore.
I don't like it at all. It's not, like a very, very thin, wispy beard.
It's very off-putting.
I like the joke I made that cracked myself up was when I sent you that picture of Rami Malek pumping his fist in the air. Like, just I like remember this. That one. And then I was like, when mom says you can have Connor over to spend the night.
I still have to tweet your Joker meme still.
Yeah.
Which one? Oh, yeah.
That boy?
Yeah.
Okay, they did reveal Bardem. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, they wouldn't not show him.
Phoebe Waller-Bridge, the Screen Rant article Jeff gave us, says that they're pleased as punch with the way Bond 25's come out that they want her to write 26. So that's cool. She was as good as she could have been on SNL last night.
They made her do an American accent, right?
Yeah, they a couple times. But the best skits that she was in was like the British war correspondents, you know, they kind of wrote it more for her, and then it turned out better. Surprise, surprise.
Who could have thought?
Bond 25. What's the real name? You know the real title?
No Time to Die.
There we go. Also, I feel like we should know who the Bond theme song singer is going to be, too.
Just did Incredibles.
That was Incredibles. We should know the person who's going to sing the Bond song.
Who should it be? I feel like Tropar has a good take on this.
We said Lil Nas X. I'm still into that.
Da Baby.
Let him ride the
wave. Da Baby showed up to it. He's at an award show yesterday. He looked like the WB Frog. It was really funny.
Da Baby in Juice WRLD.
James Bond about to go into sicko mode.
That would be, I mean, that's good. That would be way better than whatever they end up deciding to do.
It's going to be like fucking Sam Smith again or something.
Oh, Sam Smith. Apparently Radiohead did the song and then they canned it. Or Tom York.
Okay.
I still can't believe it won the Oscar too. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. That was tough.
That's just unreal.
It's going to be Maroon 5, dude.
Adam Levine.
It's going to be Jimmy Fallon doing Barry Gibb singing the theme song.
It's going to be Bono. Bono and the Edge on the.
I feel like Bono done a Bond song?
No way you two did anything to do with Bond song.
The closest they've ever come was the song from Batman. Which is very.
Oh, never mind. I thought they did Goldeneye for a second, but they have a song in Goldeneye, but they didn't do.
Tina Turner did Goldeneye.
Okay.
The Tina Turner did Goldeneye.
Wait, the song was written by Bono and the Edge.
Tina Turner's?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So, yeah, right. I guess they kind of did it.
They kind of did do it, yeah.
Good. How about that? I mean, don't get me wrong. I did not know that when I asked.
And then, like, the Daniel Craig. So, Chris Cornell, rest in peace, did Casino Royale. Then Alicia Keys and Jack White did
Casino Royale?
No, they did
Spectre. Well, it
was Quantum of Solace.
Quantum of Solace, okay.
Yeah, and then Adele did Skyfall, and Sam Smith did Spectre.
How about this? This is Tina Turner revealing in the details on the Bond song. Tina Turner said, Bono sent me the worst demo. He kind of threw it together as if he thought I wasn't going to do it. Music legend Tina Turner has revealed she signed up for an iconic James Bond theme song despite the really bad demo tape sent to her by its co-writer Bono. Turner, 78, was approached in the 90s to perform Goldeneye but couldn't make out the essence of the song, probably because the U2 lead singer was hoarse on the demo track he sent to her home in Zurich, Switzerland.
Tina Turner lives in Zurich?
Zurich's such a power move of a place to live.
She just kind of just roasted. She's like, I didn't even know what key to practice it in.
Poor Bono. Huh. South Park remake takes the giant shit. That was a good one. And they measure it in Keurigs. Well, that was a funny one.
I guess. I just...
You're anti-Bono now?
No, I feel like you two get shit on unnecessarily.
Ah, dude, I went to a U2 concert. That's the first big concert I know, the ever claw. Went to in my life.
Yeah, you got the 360 claw experience.
Great experience. And they called up Scott Kelly in the International Space Station and asked him what song to play. And he asked, right. Beautiful Day. It was nuts.
And, you know, Bono got a little bit preachy, and that's okay. But, yeah, you two, they're okay in my book. Just some lads from
Ireland.
Yeah, but like which Irish city?
They're Dublin, I'm pretty sure, that general area. They all went to the same high school, like all the original members. Same high school as
Northern Irish?
Bono's from Rotunda Hospital, Dublin, Ireland.
Dublin, okay. Yeah, they're definitely not Northern.
Yeah. Ireland. No, they're just standard old Irish. I tell you that my parents went to a U2 concert when they were in college, Nassau Community College. They went to a free one that they were playing. Yeah, because they weren't famous yet. And then I went to one and it cost me like $80. Circle of life.
I never went to a U2 concert. You know why?
Why?
Because I know Bono.
Number one. What's like the biggest musician in like the greater Midwest area? Like what would be like the one everyone would want to go to when you were growing
really,
up?
There's really no... Anyway. Like aside from Springsteen, there's really no differences in who's the biggest musician.
It's not like Meatloaf.
One area at a time. No, it's not Meatloaf. It's like all the kids in my high school love Meatloaf. It's like, dude, fucking, you look just like Loaf today. Hell yeah, dude. I'm loafing. Yeah, bro. Dude, give me your Meatloaf impersonation.
Oh, it's cold and low.
Bro, you sound just like me, bro.
That's pretty good, actually.
That was really good.
You're pretty fucking cool.
That was a good
L right there.
What a good Meatloaf.
Oh, it's cold and lonely in the deep, dark night. I can see paradise. Anyway, the biggest musician of 2002 in the Midwest. Dude, I don't know.
DeBarge.
Venga Boys.
The Venga Boys.
Everybody want to get on the Venga bus, dude.
What a fucking great song. What I hear that song, I immediately want to party. Come in. What the fuck? Is it just it's their bus? Like is there the bus the one that's coming?
Who knows? Isn't it a sexual metaphor?
Dude, I'm sure everything it was like a deep Central European fucking Euro pop group. So everything they sang was about sex.
Like it was Club Vandersex exclusive.
Yeah, exactly. Very Dutch. Extremely Dutch.
Okay. Let's move on from Bond. Time for the ad read. Our next ad read. This episode brought to you in part by Movement. That's right. Movement, folks. How much time do you spend in front of your digital screens? Do you know, Trill?
7 hours a day.
Okay.
Bad screens though, not good screens. Including good screens, I'm assuming more.
Yeah, including good screen, I'm probably 10 hours with good screen. I'm probably 7 okay. hours bad screen.
Yeah, yeah. For me, I know I spend hours at a time on my screens, good and bad. Between phone, work, watching shows, playing video games, That's why I started wearing the Movement Everscroll blue light filtering glasses. You can I wear those bad boys in the videos we post. So that's how you know I'm not lying. They're built to protect your eyes from blue light. That's known to cause eye strain, discomfort, poor sleeping patterns. Talk about something that helps your eyes not feel like burning lava before and after bed.
It's what Bono wears.
It's what, yes, Bono.
Yeah, correct.
see if we get in trouble for this one. Bono wears Movement glasses.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Allegedly, I have heard. The average person spends almost 7+ hours a day in front of a screen. Movement blue light glasses help us change our habits so that we can keep up with the changing technological world. I mean, at this point, if you're working a job that isn't in front of a screen, I mean, it's kind of crazy. Obviously, there are plenty of jobs that don't, but I feel like everything involves a screen in some sort of way. And they look like regular glasses, none of that dumb yellow tint stuff. And you won't look like you have transition lenses, which we decided are nerdy and lame on our list.
Tim Gunn decided that, not us.
True. Tim Gunn did say that. You get 50% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to movementmvmt.com/lights, LIGHTS. Shop Movement Everscroll blue light filtering glasses. Trust me, they help. No headaches. They are awesome. And they look good, too. Go to movementmvmt.com/lights. That's mvmt.com/lights.
Great song.
All right. All right. He just sent me this song. I told you I talked to him. I'm going to get his take. I'll see what he does. I can't believe the news today. I wear these glasses and the blue lights go away.
Oh, man. I didn't know you had actually something prepared for that. That's amazing.
I didn't.
Well, no, that's what I mean. I mean, I did it off the top. Very impressed.
Off the dome.
I wish I put another Adderine in the middle or Adderine.
No, the Adderine was over. Thank you. The movement. Let's. Hey, oh, that's right. Am I good to tweet that Joker meme?
This is Bono from U2. And when I put on glasses, I make sure they're blue light blocking glasses.
Hey, what's up? It's me, The Edge. What's going on?
Oh, no.
John Travolta Edge.
John Travolta walking Edge.
with the beanie on. Did you guys ever see that guitar documentary?
Yeah, we've talked about it before.
Wait, what is it called? Let There Be Noise or
something louder noise?
Oh, yeah. Some loud.
It's going to get louder. I don't know.
It was really cool. But like there's a scene that's edited to make the Edge look like an idiot because he's like with Jimmy Page and they're shredding. And then he plays this simple like riff and then puts it through his edge modifier to get this U2 sound. But he's skilled.
Very don't believe what's it called? It might get loud.
Yeah.
Yeah, they build a guitar to like a fucking plank of wood from the beginning of the movie.
He uses like the same whatever amp system that he's used since like the 70s. It's crazy.
Yeah. Hey, I'm tweeting this Joker meme. Can that be the tweet of the night?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
Okay. It's your art. You made it. All right, here we go. Next up. I feel like we've never talked about this movie, and that's surprising to me. Inspector Gadget is getting a reboot. The Inspector Gadget movie, the live-action Inspector Gadget with Matthew Broderick. It came out in 1999. Matthew Broderick, Rupert Everett, Michelle Trachtenberg, talk about D.L. Hughley. Talk about old 90s names. Andy Dick was in this movie.
Oh, man, I remember that.
I loved Inspector Gadget as a kid. I was like 8. It was incredible. But they are doing a reboot to Inspector Gadget. I think this is going to suck no matter how they do it. There's no way, shape, or form Inspector Gadget can be cool. And you know there is going to be some sort of new age remix to the Inspector Gadget original song that might actually be not bad. And that's about it. Like, they'll have someone, like a new age artist come in and redo that song. That'll be the only thing that comes out of this, if that.
Dude, Big Mouth reminded me of when Ludacris used the Soul Bossa Nova in one of the songs, number one spot.
One of the episodes.
Oh, did we use that in the episode?
Yeah.
No. They closed out their episode with that.
I think we used it at the end of an episode once.
Also awesome.
Yeah. That'd be good. So, no, I'm just trying to think of other songs. You remember the Rugrats rap song with Maya? That had the Rugrats theme in it?
Yes.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that the original gets used because someone recently did do that, and I forget who it was. There's been a couple. Dr. Seuss. Not Dr. Seuss. The Grinch. Who redid the Grinch song?
Jim Carrey and Busta Rhymes?
No, from the new Grinch.
Oh, Tyler, the Creator.
Tyler, the Creator. That's what I'm thinking. It's going to be something like that for Inspector Gadget. Like, I would almost bet eating a candy bar off the back of a Times Square Elmo on knowing that's going to happen. And did you know that there was an Inspector Gadget 2 that was released direct to VHS? And do you know who played Inspector Gadget instead of Matthew Broderick?
French Stewart.
That's correct.
That sounds about right.
Did you look that up?
Dude, I'm a huge French Stewart guy.
Do you remember when Jimmy Fallon used to do French Stewart?
You remember when I used to tweet at French Stewart every day and ask him to acknowledge me? And then he said something. It's like, how could I acknowledge a man that was so mean to his wife that she left him or something like that?
Yes. Holy shit, I forgot about this completely.
Oh, my God.
I just found it. Took her son's little bones and fled to a shelter. Oh my god.
I mean, it hasn't aged that well. Like, yes, it's in 2015 context, it was, you know, it's okay. No, Inspector Gadget was my favorite cartoon growing up. That wasn't Ninja Turtles related. And while I never watched the 1999 movie, I have little faith that this is good. I don't think the concept of Inspector Gadget's cool. I think it's lame. I think he's a big dork. I think Penny does all the work. I think the dog does work too, and Inspector Gadget just takes credit for it all. And honestly, I think he should be humbled.
Yeah, I mean, Inspector Gadget's a fed. We all know this. I don't think we want any part of this. I think we're an anti-Inspector Gadget 2 or reboot podcast at this moment.
Why does he have the handles for his little go-go gadget copter?
I guess to
control the direction.
I think to control the direction. I had really cool toys from this movie, and I think they were all from McDonald's or Burger King.
That's not how a helicopter works, right? It doesn't control the direction off the top blade, right?
No,
it's the rotor at the back. So, like, why does he? I don't get the physics of that. Maybe somebody who graduated from Purdue Engineering can explain that shit to me.
Are you listening to this Ad Astra? What was his name again? Rory McSomething? I forgot it already.
Who else was supposed to be in this movie? Let's see. Chevy Chase, Steve Martin. Brendan Fraser was considered, but turned it down because he was in George of the Jungle.
Mm, smart move.
Cameron Diaz turned down a role. I mean, there's no way this movie aged at all, and it definitely wasn't a good movie when it initially came out. It made $134 million on a $90 million budget. But they're planning on rebooting it. Sure.
Like, who's going to play Inspector Gadget?
Well, we don't know.
Who do you think, though?
Oh, who do we think?
Yeah.
I don't know, but you know the amount of tech upgrades he's going to have, like 21st century things, it's going to be quite the scene.
I feel like this could be I don't even know anymore. I mean...
Bad.
I don't want to say. I mean, it's going to be bad, but I'm trying to think of an actor. Like one of the four...
actor will play Inspector Gadget?
Yeah, one of the four Chrises, maybe.
Alec Baldwin. Ooh.
Too old, dude. Baldwin?
I don't know. How old was Matthew Broderick when he played?
Yeah, I mean, Matthew Broderick was semi-fuckable when he made this. Like, you need a fuckable Inspector Gadget.
Baldwin has gray hair. Great hair for his age.
Yeah, but Baldwin's not daddy. Like, Inspector Gadget needs to be daddy.
All right, so you need daddy old, like a nerdy, like disarming face?
And somebody's in his late 30s, early 40s. They could be daddy. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm trying to think of one that like looks old. Maybe Ryan Reynolds. This seems like a bad role he might take.
I mean, this is obviously going to be marketed to younger people, kids. I don't see how this succeeds in 2020 or 21 or whenever this comes out.
Justin Timberlake.
I could totally see that as a JT role.
You know what? Yeah, JT could be daddy. Mm-hmm. JT's fuckable.
I don't think anyone's denying this.
That's Bob Iger. It's one of his last decisions. Like, yeah, he's pretty fuckable.
Dude, you know people talk about like casting decisions like this, right? They got to.
For sure. Sure, I think of who else.
We're just being real. Like, I want to be in charge of a studio, and I want to be like, we need daddy in this role. And this guy is not daddy.
You know what I would kind of like in this? And I think he would make this a good movie, maybe, is Bill Hader. Like, he's just one of those, like a zonky guy that I think could make this a decent movie.
I mean, Bill Hader would be a great Inspector Gadget, but I think this is beneath Bill Hader.
I agree. I don't think he should. But.
He'd be a fan. He could do the Inspector Gadget voice so fucking well.
Right, that's what I'm saying. I just think he's like just perfectly zonky enough where just he just fits into that sort of movie role. Whatever happened to the Pink Panther movies? I don't remember watching the second one. I kind of lumped those together. I don't know why.
The one with like the old ones or the reboot with Steve Martin?
Steve Martin one, yeah.
Beyonce. Didn't have Beyonce in it?
Ooh, yes. Wait.
The Pink Panther 2?
Who is in Pink Panther
1? Emily Mortimer was in the second one.
Beyonce is in the first Pink Panther.
Did you know that, Tro? You're a Downton Abbey person. Emily Mortimer was in the second one.
I don't know who that is.
What, is that not the same person that you were talking about before?
Michelle Dockery was...
Oh, Dockery, never mind. All the British names kind of meld together. This one had Andy Garcia and Alfred Molina, though. That's pretty good. John Cleese. Some other people.
Jimmy Smits is no Andy Garcia.
That was so funny. Big Mouth's new season, like, it's not... I don't think it's their best one, but it is pretty fucking funny. The whole Andy Garcia bit was killing me with the Adderall. Yeah, I don't know. I don't remember the second Pink Panther too well, but I do remember thinking the first one was okay. I mean, it's just the trench coat. Maybe that's why I looped them together. Just that whole trench coat.
They're detectives. Yeah, they got the detective trench coat on.
Yeah.
The Inspector Gadget probably took some nods from, you know, like the whole Get Smart and the Inspector Clouseau thing. So,
The first one is a 26 on Rotten.
They were supposed to make a new Pink Panther movie that actually involved the Panther,
mm-hmm.
but they never made it. I don't think.
What's Matthew Broderick's most iconic role that's not Ferris Bueller?
I mean, that's tough.
Shit. I don't really know.
I was because he was on SNL last night.
He was?
Yeah, he did one of the knee slapper cameos at the start.
Yeah, awesome.
And I forgot he was
Adult Simba.
SJP.
Oh, you know what? I really did like him in Glory. But I don't think that's like an iconic role necessarily, right?
Yeah, he was. I mean, he was good. He's been in good movies. I'm just saying, Ferris Bueller's it. Like, that's his role.
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
They even referenced that last night in SNL. And he's probably to a point in his career where he's embraced it. But I'm like, I was trying to think because, like, he's never, I don't feel like he's ever had the real second act. Not like a Keith Tonnison's, Broderick. Rockinson's.
I think that's because like every like year or so somebody brings up, hey, remember what Matthew Broderick got into when he was younger? And it's like, oh yeah.
We don't talk about that at the dinner table, Kenjay.
And everyone's like, oh yeah. And then like I think he just goes back underground for a little bit.
Speaking of movies, I'm shocked are happening. Apparently they're gonna be making more Bourne movies. Why? the only memorable thing to come from
again.
The only memorable thing to come from the last Bourne movie was the Jesus Christ is Jason Bourne meme.
That was it.
That, was the only that good came thing from that. The fourth Matt Damon one.
Mm-hmm. After they just retconned the fucking Jeremy Renner one, right?
Did they retcon it? I forget. I hope they did.
Or not retcon it, but just like move on as if nothing happened.
Yeah. That was a stupid decision to make one without him. I love the Bourne trilogy.
Yeah.
The most recent Bourne was not great, at least in my opinion. And again, the most memorable thing was the meme. The meme is the only thing that really came out of that movie that has any lasting effect. It's a great meme. Don't get me wrong.
I think
Jason Bourne's a product of its time. I think it was good for what it was, but I think it's time to let it die.
I don't know, man. Julia Stiles is back in movies now. She was in Hustlers. Maybe it's just that time. They got team back up. I think she died, actually, in one of them. Her character. Did a character die in one of the Bournes?
No, I think... No, she's alive.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure.
This just doesn't need to happen. I
felt like after the Renner Bourne, it kind of lost me. It, it, they it was like it showed cracks in the Bourne franchise, and it could never get me back, you know?
Yeah, it was tough. I mean, the first few were so good, too. Like, it's really tough to kind of get that moment back. And
the original trilogy, fantastic.
Yeah, yeah, very, very good. And, like, those fight sequences, that's one of those ones where, like, I think fight choreography really took it over the top because, like, I'm just trying to think of, like, the fights between him and the other assassins were so crazy. And, again, it comes down to some of the stuff where, like, he would do things where almost, like, with Burn Notice, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's kind of cool. I'll do that if I ever end up in Prague and I need to escape from a bank. Like, I'll remember that moment, which I won't. But it's I always thought they were kind of interesting, and I just don't think they can kind of capture that sort of lightning again because there's been so many other espionage thriller type movies that are just as good.
We've said enough. Like we wrapped up a very interesting and intriguing storyline from start to finish. They didn't need a fourth, didn't need a fifth, don't need a sixth. There is a Treadstone TV series, though, based on the Bourne franchise. And apparently it'll tie in with that. That's what they're saying.
Awesome.
Yeah. No thanks. All right. Two more things, Star Wars and Marvel related, kind of quick. One, Wedge Antilles. Remember Wedge?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The only non-main character to survive all three original movies. Well, guess what? This is maybe a little spoiler related. Actually, no, they released the fucking book. He's on the cover of a Star Wars book that is part of the lead up to The Rise of Skywalker. So there are rumors and speculation that Wedge might be back in Star Wars The Rise of Skywalker, which would, again, lend to the idea that this is going to be a jam-packed fan service movie. And apparently, he fucking hates these movies.
Really?
Apparently, the main actor, he's Ewan McGregor's uncle.
And really? He
suggested to Ewan to not do Star Wars.
That's kind of funny, actually. I didn't know that.
So I was more surprised, like, on the level of the character, not very shocked. But on the idea that Dennis Lawson would be back playing him, that's very surprising. If he's back, it's just on the cover. We don't know for sure. But there's a chance he cameos in this movie. But yeah, he told them not to do the movie, I believe.
Hey, man, money. Money's good.
Okay, here you go. He was actually... he said, let me get the actual quote. When asked about returning to Force Awakens, he said, they asked me, but it just would have bored me. So he already turned down being in the sequel trilogy. So maybe they begged. They're like, what the fuck, man? Come on, just come back. It's a paycheck.
Why would you say no? It's just like free money for like, what, one day of shooting, which will already be in the UK somewhere, like if that. Like, it doesn't seem like a big deal.
Just kind of surprised. Disappointed, but I hope he's actually back now.
Yeah, me too. Good old Wedge action.
The Liberator.
We got Admiral Akbar back for like all five. He's big dead, right? Didn't he die in Last Jedi, Admiral Akbar?
Yeah, that was one of the things people were pissed off about because they murked his ass so unceremoniously.
He died. Try to think of the other characters from like that general era that are still living. It's like, kicking.
Did you want them to give like a 3-minute Admiral Akbar sequence where
what's going on?
Leia's like cradling him, all of his like blood slimes drooping out into like her white costume.
Oh, tell my 700 children, I love them.
I love them.
He said like all of what, like 20 words in the entire franchise. It's
I reproduce with myself. I have eggs hidden all over the galaxy.
the episode or the couple episode arc in Clone Wars where they go to Admiral Akbar's planet is pretty sick. It's a great one with the shark guy. You remember that one, Jeff?
Yes.
That guy was terrifying. That shark admiral guy that worked for the trade union.
I forgot Wedge was in the Rebels series. I forgot about
that. Oh yeah, I forgot about that shit.
Mm-hmm. That just reminded me of that.
Go make your check, dude.
So it sounds like he's back. Last thing, Marvel related. This was disappointing to see. The Infinity Saga Collector's Edition box set for every movie from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, the Infinity Saga, which is from Iron Man all the way to Spider-Man Far From Home. It feels weird that it just doesn't end with Avengers Endgame, but whatever. You get all the movies. You get an exclusive Matt Ferguson lithograph, so like a sign like from the artist thing, a numbered limited edition collection, like things signed with all the names of the actors, for like from the main Avengers. That's the same signature you see at the end of the movie. A signed letter from Kevin Feige. And then one bonus disc. Cost $550. That's insane.
That seems fair.
No, that is insane. One bonus disc? Who is okay? Okay, so if you break the numbers down, I get it. But tell me who this is for. Who is this for?
Super fans.
How many of those super fans already own these fucking movies?
No, I get it. I get it. Like I know what you're saying. Like as a price per disc thing, it's not bad. But where's the value add? If you already own the movies, which you likely do.
Yeah,
you got to rebuy them, but you're not getting anything. Okay, I'm following. I'm on the same page now.
Okay, yeah, that's my problem. It's that, like, this is definitely for the fan. I own only a couple. I want this. It's very cool. This is something I want for, like, my collection of shit. But, like, you got to have more than one disc. One disc? We couldn't get more content than what goes on one disc? Like, that's kind of crazy. There being 24 movies. When I bought Transformers on DVD back in the day, I got like 3 discs of Michael Bay yelling at people behind the scenes. One disc. You don't even get a fucking hat. There's no cat. Like, it should come with a hat.
Do they say how much content is on said bonus disc? Maybe it's like 24 hours of content.
It says never seen, deleted, and extended scenes and more. So we'll see. But I mean, like, they should have done more than that, I feel like. That's a lot. But also, the resale value, I bet, can be higher than that. That's one thing. If you're a flipper, if you're a Gary Vaynerchuk flipper, Gary Vaynerchuk's going to buy like 100 of these.
Resell on the Facebook Marketplace for $501.
flip them all. He's going to flip every single one of them. Yeah. It's just disappointing. I'm still going to probably find a way to buy it. Though, I don't know, $550, that's a lot for that.
Yeah, do they have financing options, like a four-year?
I'm not even kidding. I think they do. Yeah, they do. There's a financing option on it.
Man. Well, it's called a credit card. But
yes, I know. But there's like a payment plan to buy it, apparently. You know, like on a like QVC.
Can you imagine them coming and repoing your box set?
We're only taking away half the We're only taking away 3 games.
You gotta make your payments, Jeff.
Is your wife home today?
No.
That'd be so funny. She's like, yeah, we're only taking away phase one today. We'll come back for phase two if you don't make up the payment.
Jeff's mom calls him. How's it going, Jeffy?
Let's fucking do my finish saga!
He's driving cross country to California wearing a diaper.
Come on, JG Wentworth, please. I need to make up money. Oh god.
Oh my god. All right. Let's do this review. Ready to talk Oceans? Oceans 12 came out in 2004. This is on Netflix. If you're listening, you haven't watched it yet. 12 and 13 are on Netflix, not 11, not the good one. Again, came out in 2004, star-studded ensemble cast, about as good as a cast can get, especially for the 2000s. George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Julia Roberts, Matt Damon, Andy Garcia, Don Cheadle, Bernie Mac, Casey Affleck, Elliot Gould, Scott Kahn, Carl Reiner, Jerry Weintraub's in this movie for the first time. Bunch of people.
Jerry Perpetrate.
Eddie Izzard. Yeah.
Jerry Perp drank in the 2004 classic Ocean's 12. Them and Nash Greer. we're gonna steal all the money from MagCon. That's Ocean's 14. Sorry, Jeff.
What if the Fabergé egg were tickets to the Vans Warped Tour? I think it would go with something like this.
In the front row seats to see Paramore.
Oh no.
Instead of the Julia Roberts thing, it's like, yeah, we're Cobra Starship.
Oh no. That would actually that would be their bit. Except it would be what's his name, Shawn Mendes, who was a big viner before he was a musician. So they'd be like, "Yeah, you look just like Shawn Mendes, dude. We'll have you pretend to be him."
Oh, was God. He a comedy viner?
Yeah, yeah, he was like a comedy and thirst trap and singer viner.
Yeah,
teeny bopper, like all of them.
All right, sorry, Jeff.
After successfully robbing 5 casinos in one night, Danny Ocean and his crew of thieves have big problems. Despite pulling off one of the biggest heists in Las Vegas history, the members of the gang have already spent much of the money they stole. Casino owner Terry Benedict demands the Ocean return the money plus millions more in interest. Unable to come up with the cash, the crew is forced to come together to pull off another series of heists, this time in Europe. Ocean's 12.
Sorry, the Mahomes Paul Malu Head and Shoulders commercials on.
Are you thinking about them hawking for the 3-piece one that we had?
Yeah. Yes, except it's off screen. Richie Incognito comes up. He's like, "Let me tell you about the third aspect."
guys, I'm here to talk to you about 3-in-1 Papa shampoo. It's got Jergens in it. I swear it's good for you. Help stimulate pubic hair growth. It's really good.
All right, Ocean's 12.
You know, the thing about Ocean's 12 is that I don't think it's that bad. I just don't think it's that good either. And I also think compared to Ocean's 11, it's a huge disappointment. And that's the
big problem, I think.
And so when I, you know, originally watched it, obviously so we talked about Ocean's 8. The big complaint I had about Ocean's 8 was that the heist didn't feel big enough. And that's what I like about Ocean's 11, and that's why I thought they did well about Ocean's 13, them going back to the whole casino thing, because the heist feels huge. Big building, big operations, you know, multifaceted operations. And this one just felt smaller, even though, you know, it was overseas and more was going on in terms of having other characters involved, like the Fox, the Vincent Cassell and his character. It felt smaller. So, like, I remember being disappointed by that. I remember being disappointed by it felt like the main thing was, like, it was really weird how essentially they're all being threatened to be killed, but nobody really cared that much about it.
Right. And there wasn't anything about it that felt particularly threatening. Like, Terry Benedict just not very, like, "Yeah, these guys are going to kill you." He's just like, "No, you're going to die." Like, that's it, yeah. I promise.
So like, that was the disconnect for me. Is a sequel, and the stakes are supposed to be high, and the stakes were high. But the characters never really acted like the stakes were particularly high. And they always acted like they had it in the bag, which I guess is fine. You're smooth talking. But I think one of the things was that, like, what they were trying to do with this one was go in that direction. They at least could have made it to where, like, you, the characters at least felt
show like a laser pointer on someone, like show like a laser pointer on somebody, like, "Yeah, like, this is what's going to happen if you don't get this $200 million in 2-3 days, whatever." Like, any of their stakes did not feel good enough in this. What would you rate it?
My feelings are very disjointed, much like the movie itself. I'd probably give it like a 60. I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's bad. It's entertaining. You know, you have Clooney and you have Pitt and you have Zeta Jones and you have Roberts and you have everybody back. And I think they put on entertaining enough. It just, it doesn't have that same magic there. Like, whatever that formula was, that Soderbergh heist, it, for some reason, this is my least favorite one of those. And it reflects in that, but by itself, like, when you don't hold it up against the other Ocean's movies, it isn't horrible. It's just, it doesn't hit.
Yeah, I think, and I gave it a 60 as well. And I think, like, something we talk about a lot is how sequels, they're inherently, like, at a disadvantage just because it's really tough to be better than the original when the original is very good. And I think this kind of stumbled out of the gate. Like, the first, like, half, maybe, like, even 3/4 of the movie just feels, like, so, so painstakingly slow. And then it picks up in, like, the final act, and it's, like, good. And I enjoyed that quite a bit. But it's just, like, it's like you said, just disjointed. And I just didn't really enjoy the first, like, whole half or so of the movie. And I don't think you can really, like, recover from something like that unless you have an insane final act. And it wasn't an insane final act. It was just a good final act. And I don't know. Just like you said, too, not great stakes. Didn't feel threatened by anybody. I will say, though, someone I enjoyed more on the rewatch, Vincent Cassell, I did actually like that European villain bad guy. I did rather like his whole dancing bit on second rewatch with the weird Euro music going on in the background as well.
Yeah, he was not bad. I gave it a 67, by the way. I don't hate it. I think it's a below average movie. 65 to 69 to me, that, or I guess for our score is 68, like the mid 70s, that's below average, which is disappointing because I think there's a lot here where it could have been good and it just simply wasn't, because it just got a little in the way of itself. I think the big reason why Ocean's 11 is so fantastic is because part of it's because it's simple, right? Like they kept it simple. It's complex. Like the heist itself is complex, but the storytelling is simple enough throughout, right? Where you can follow the steps, you can see what they're doing. So when they pull it off, you're like, oh shit, it's all these things thrown together. Like I know that, like that oh shit moment is easy to conceptualize. Where this one, like there's almost too many fake outs. They're trying to do too much, and I think they focus on some of the wrong stuff as well. Let me just break down. This is the exact order of what happens, right? This is not how it plays out in the movie, but this is the exact order of what happens in the story. Starts off, Terry Benedict wants his money back, right?
He needs the money. Fucking money.
Yeah, give me, yeah, Tess. Where's Tess, give me my money. Danny, I need my money, Danny.
I'm going to visit all you guys one at a time.
Threaten you with my either cane or golf club, not quite sure. I'm going to threaten you by talking to you very meanly and then blowing up Brad Pitt's car. Just like, I mean, actually, I like the opening scene a lot, but he just very escalates it so much with Rusty.
You got to send the right message to the right people.
Yeah. So he needs his money. Okay, great. They introduce all that. I think the beginning's pretty solid. They then go to Amsterdam where they attempt to do a theft, steal some money, but it's foiled by the Night Fox. Okay. The Night Fox,
your Marvel villain name.
The Night Fox set everything up. So at this point, they really did get beat. Next up, they do meet with Lamarck, the greatest villain of all time, who also happens to be the father of Catherine Zeta-Jones' character Isabel.
Spoiler alert!
Don't you think she should have disclosed that when she was giving her speech to the?
She didn't know it, I don't think, right?
No, she did know.
Oh, she did know that whole time. I thought she just thought that it was
My understanding, she knew it's Lamarck. I don't know, though. Maybe again, the movie does get confusing. I've watched it plenty, too.
Terry, listen to me. Me and Russ, we had a plan. We're going to make it's a new shampoo. It's 3-in-1. And we're going to make you back triple your money. And then some.
Lizzie, his name is the Night Fox.
Oh, no. It is a blacklist villain. All right, hold on. Here we go. We're going to get through this. They meet with Lamarck, Rusty, and Danny. And they actually, I learned that they CGI'd out the Eiffel Tower from that scene. The scene where they're in Paris talking to him. That's a bizarre move.
Why would they do that?
Why would you? They're like, they didn't want it to be cliche. I'm like, it's in Paris. Like, I expect to see the Eiffel. Whatever. It's not a big deal. It doesn't ruin the movie. I just was surprised by that. He wants the egg.
It's like Team America when the Eiffel Tower and the Arc de Triomphe are right next to each other and it's set in the opening.
So he wants the egg. We do learn at one point that he had one point stolen the egg, but his wife told him to take it back. And he also wants his daughter, and it's kind of like a fuck you to the Night Fox, who he doesn't, I don't think he's like, it's like his apprentice, but he kind of doesn't like how snobby he is. Yeah. So they then now know where the egg is. So at that point, they know where the egg is, and they're going to play along with the con because that's how they get Night Fox to pay Terry Benedict. And they also, they're offended by, he like broke the number one rule of thieves, right? He like ratted them out. So they then go and they like fake accept the challenge from the Night Fox to steal the egg. And on the way to the fake heist, they steal the real egg because Lamarck told them where the egg would be. So that's it. The heist has happened already. Like the big reveal has happened. We don't know that as the viewer. We have no idea. They're in a train station at one point and that's it. That's the only idea that we have that they're in Paris at that train station. The fake egg heist happens. It's foiled. They're arrested. They bring in Julia Roberts. They bring in Tess to play Julia Roberts, which we'll get to that in a second. They all get arrested. Matt Damon, his character. Linus, his mom, works for the FBI, comes and breaks them out of jail. He's on the inside. She also was recently in Succession, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
She was the main Pierce who turns down... Nan. And then as they're leaving, the big reveal happens. It was all set up. They go and tell Night Fox, we fucked you over, you big idiot.
But he showed off that swick ass dance sequence where he goes through all the lasers.
True, dancing, true.
Which was awesome.
But I did all the dancing.
So like when you explain it like that, it's not bad. But the problem with this movie is that it doesn't happen like that. And my biggest gripe with this is the reason it doesn't totally pay off. Now, I have smaller gripes as well. I think they focus, like the Lamarck shit is too focused on, there's too many characters, simply. There are too many side storylines, and it just gets too much. It overcomplicates it. But with the original heist in Ocean's 11, the reason why the reveal and the payoff feels so satisfying is because you see the step-by-step of things happening, and then you see the moment where it all happens, right? Like, you see them in the vault. You see them go in there. You see Terry Benedict go down to the vault, and you see SWAT team roll out, and you have no idea that that's Rusty and the rest of the 11. So you see that happen. So when they kind of play the big reveal, you're like, holy shit, I saw it the whole time. In this movie, they play the stealing of the egg, which is, it's really just Linus spotting a guy walk into a train station, and then Scott Conn's character and Danny get into a fight over the Red Sox and Yankees. Like hats. It's right. A hat. Who's Scott Conn is Turk, right? Yeah, Virgil is Casey Affleck, Scott Conn's Turk. And then that's it. So you see like, oh, cool, that's the reveal. That's really how they got the egg. But we never saw that play out during the movie. So that you being in awe of the moment isn't there. Because it's like, oh, okay, I guess like that happened off screen. We didn't see that. Like that's new to us. Like the movie dupes the viewer. Which I guess you get duped with Ocean's 11, but you get duped in a sense where you don't see what happened at all. So you're kind of like, oh, so the thing that happened, we weren't in on at all in any way, shape, or form. That's where my biggest grab and disappointment comes from. It's the story just feels it's what'd you say about it earlier, Trill?
No, I don't know.
You used a better word. You said, I don't know. It's disjointed, I think.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, anytime. Yeah. I think the balancing act in like the heist movie is, you got to feel like you're along with the team and you know what's going on, but then they have something up their sleeve, which you didn't realize, but you got to make it in a way so it feels clever and it's not insulting, and having something being done in the past rather than maybe having something happen before your eyes, but you don't really know it's actually there is a little bit different.
It felt almost like they spent a ton of time on storyboarding basically in the first one. They just didn't really have that here. They're just like, all right, here's the twist. And then we'll just kind of like throw it all together on the day. And I think they should have spent way more time making sure that it came together cohesively in this movie, because it could have been good. Like the pieces were sort of there. Like there were some missteps, like the Julia Roberts thing and all that. But I think like it had the potential to be a very decent follow up and like a solid sequel, whatever. And it just didn't end up being cohesive, which kind of sucks.
Yeah, and I also think the big thing, and this is like why I don't think we liked Ocean's 8 as much as well either, is in the heist movie, you want like a big bad to get fucked over. That's part of the fun. And Terry Benedict was the perfect character to get fucked over because he was such a huge asshole. So you really enjoyed that in 11. In 12, like I liked the Night Fox, but it wasn't established enough to really care when they fucked him over. It didn't have that same thing. Didn't have that same feeling there. Same feeling of smug satisfaction.
They didn't develop whatever the Night Fox or whatever as like a villain enough where you're like, wow, I really hate this guy. You just know he's rich and does it for fun, which I think, like, I guess that's supposed to make you hate him more, and I'm just like, don't really feel one way or the other about him.
Well, plus they paid back Benedict.
Exactly, yeah. Which like, is like, that's some
can they find shit. They yeah find out a way to fuck him again.
Exactly. Cool. Way cooler. And then he ends up like joining him right in the next one anyway.
Yeah.
He joins Benedict.
Al Pacino.
Yeah,
Al Pacino. Whoa. Al Pacino. That was the character from Tropic Thunder, right? Al Pacino.
Al Pacino. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on? That's me, Christopher Walken.
You're adding too many storylines on top of each other. You're adding them getting Terry's money back. Then you have the knife. It's just like, what the fuck?
I just didn't really give one shit or another about the whole Catherine Zeta-Jones like storyline and like her redemption with her father, or whatever. Did not care about that one bit. We want to see the plot.
You could make it work with Night Fox and Terry, but the problem is you shoehorn, like, you got to cut. You either got to cut Night Fox or Catherine Zeta-Jones out. You got to cut one of them out, I think, in order to make this work. Even that, I mean, the biggest problem for me is that you're not giving the payoff that makes the first so satisfying. It's too woven into each other, and it just doesn't flow in a way that, again, makes you at the end of the movie put it all together. Because I think that's the point of a heist movie like that, right? Like, That's why his good heist movies, Soderbergh's good heist movies, work. Or this one, it's constructed in a bizarre way. And even 13, which isn't really anywhere near as good as 11, at least kind of goes back to the basics in terms of kind of the cool shit that goes down and the things that are hidden that you kind of can pick up on.
Now, I did read a think piece about how Soderbergh made this movie as a critique of sequels, which was kind of clever. They talked about how it was like, you know, the expectation of the heist having to be bigger and better. And like that is like exhibited in the movie through I want my, you know, original plus interest. And that's kind of goes into like the more complications. I can't explain it that well. I think, yeah, that's a good way to approach it. But then I also think you got to make a movie that's entertaining too. And I think you did that, but it just wasn't to the levels of Ocean's 11. And that's where the disappointment came in. Soderbergh has said that this is his favorite of them.
There's a lot of good stuff in here. Like I will say, and there's a lot of charm with some of the characters, but I think of the way it's put together, you just don't get that throughout. Like you don't get the best parts of each character throughout. And there's also some problems with some, like with the filming, like there's not a lot of Saul. You don't get a lot of Frank because Bernie Mac was filming another movie during the time where he was sick or something.
Mr. 3000.
Yeah. I think it was Mr.
At the same time. Yeah.
There's a scene where he's like in the fucking bathroom because he's actually sick. It's like he's not in the movie a lot. Like you don't really get Ruben that much. It's just it's disappointing in that respect. And I get bringing them all back, but you have the small moments, but for the most part, it doesn't have the same vibe or feel. And I guess maybe that's what he was going for. But again, overall, the two big things for me at least: one, the payoff, the main heist, the thing that we're supposed to be shocked by in the end, it wasn't really in the movie. It was too many steps to get to that. It was too convoluted. And also, I didn't think too many characters. I think characters muddied up that even more than it was already muddied up. Whether you add in Eddie Izzard's Nagel, you add in Catherine Zeta-Jones, you add in Night Fox, Lamarck, just one thing after another. It became simply too much. Simply too much.
And did you care at all about the Zeta-Jones and Rust, like love, like romance, whatever?
No.
Like, I think they were trying to give him, like, because they sort of bill like Brad Pitt and George Clooney as like co-leads in this movie. I think they were trying to like give a little like compensation because the Clooney and Julia Roberts, so usually like romance gets all the attention. They were kind of trying to do like the same thing for Brad Pitt and Catherine Zeta-Jones, and it just didn't work. Like, I don't feel like no one cared.
Yeah, I'm with you there. The most intriguing thing about that was the opening scene.
Yeah. It was a pretty good opening.
It was a good opening. It was a really good opening.
They're always just doing little jobs and little tiny things throughout Ocean's 11. I literally just did like a large breakdown of this video. Everything from like the poker game in the first one, right? Just the way they go around the hotel and the way they or Linus doing like the quick slip to pull the codes out of Benedict's pocket during the interrogation scene with Frank. Where this one, you don't really get those moments, right? You don't really get the small little things that kind of keep it flowing, keep it quick and fast paced. And they don't get to play off each other as much. How about the Julia Roberts scene though?
It was as disappointing, I think, the second time around, to be honest.
A part of me thinks that Soderbergh likes this because there's kind of like a fuck you, some aspect.
It is a fuck you. It's essentially a fourth wall break too.
Yeah, but it's a huge one. It's a major plot device. So I think I like it as like just like a fuck you sort of thing. But in and of itself, I don't think it's particularly clever because she is Julia Roberts. She's the actress.
Like, I think that there was maybe he thought it was like smarter than it actually was because it just came off as like that. It came off as like, this is transparently not as smart as I think they think it is. And it's just not as entertaining or not as like, oh, get it? Like, you get it? We're being fourth wall broke right now. Like, I didn't feel, I don't know, blown away by that in any sense. Just like, oh, okay, it's a cool moment.
I think the problem is like, you got to know what kind of movie you're in, right? And like when you're in this, when you as the viewer in a heist movie, you're expecting some sort of clever mechanism to move everything along. Like, I think that fourth wall break maybe would be funny and clever in more of a pure comedy type movie where it's I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, I think, like, it I know I wouldn't say it's insulting, but it just was like, it was too on the nose for what it was.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it. It's like upsetting. It's just like disappointing. I think a lot of people, when they reference this movie, they mention it as like the reason it's so bad. And like, that's not true. There's many reasons why this movie did not do as well as it should have. I mean, it's still like what, the 10th highest grossing movie of 2004 or whatever. But like, there's a lot of reasons why it didn't work. And I don't think that this was like the one over like huge issue with the movie. It's just, it was like a disappointing moment for me.
You mean, you did say it's a fuck you, and it does feel like a fuck you. I think that's my problem with it. I think it's too much of a fuck you. And I think it comes in a scene too, where it doesn't have a giant payoff at the end either. That's another thing in terms of, we talked about payoffs, is that scene in the end, they only really made that second heist as a fuck you to Night Fox, right? That's the only reason, the only reason it happened. I mean, I guess they had to keep the ruse going that they were still going for the egg, but at that point he already had the egg. So like, they essentially did the egg heist twice that they didn't actually need to do because they already had it. So even the second one, like, I guess maybe that was just to bring Tess in. I don't really know, but it ended up being just feeling pointless, right? Like, it really had no meaning in the long run. The first attempt of the heist where they get arrested, sure, I guess, because they got to show Lamarck that they tried. But the second one, it just kind of, I mean, I guess if you enjoyed the moment, it's a cool add-on to the story, but it just felt unnecessary. Yeah. Where I'd rather instead see the part on the train, or see something that can show me something happened that I can maybe go, did something go on there? Like, is that going to come back later on in the movie, where we don't get that moment with this? Because again, the heist of the actual egg heist, like the actual stealing of the egg, we never see. They just reveal it at the end when they're meeting with Lamarck in a flashback. So it kind of all pays and goes back to that, is that it just adds on to the things that I don't think we needed to see, or just bloated, not even bloated a movie in terms of runtime, but bloated a movie that was too overly complex, which is what made the first one so great, is that it wasn't complex at all. The reveal was complex and really cool, but you could put the pieces together.
Yeah. I think it's a big difference.
He went back to that with Logan Lucky. Ocean 13, to an extent, it's kind of a different type of heist movie. But like, Logan Lucky was simplified in that sense, and it fucking worked. It worked really great. It was rather fantastic. I don't know. Where would you? What would be the one thing that you take out? Like, what's the one thing you fix in order to make this work better? Like, is it a? You think it comes down to a character? And I'm not saying any of the extra characters on their own did anything bad. Like, I thought Catherine Zeta-Jones was fine. I thought Night Fox was fine. I just think it's just too much.
It's cool seeing Jared Harris for 5 seconds.
He was in it for literally 15 seconds.
Doing some music with Don Cheadle. Don Cheadle's, I mean, this is one of those things, his accent, like, I think it's good, but I feel like, I don't know if English people think it's good. I mean, maybe I'll look this up. Because, like, I always, every single time I watch an Ocean's movie, I'm like, damn, Don Cheadle, like, he really kills this English accent. That's not too easy, but it might be bad, and I would have no idea. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I like the Night Fox. I just wish there was, a way to integrate the Night Fox more into, like, the Benedict storyline. And then use Benedict more.
Mm-hmm. That's true, because Benedict is the antagonist in this, in a sense, but he's really like, he's the antagonist like three times removed.
Yeah. He's pulling the strings, but he's not.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not like down in the weeds getting stuff, you know, moving.
Apparently, you meet the biggest string puller, like in the final minutes of the movie. The biggest string puller is Lamarck, and you don't get to fucking meet him.
And that's where it kind of is just like, That's too much.
It's like, that's the guy? This guy's been doing this the whole fucking time?
Well, yeah, and then that's like, if you don't really know the guy that well, like, you need somebody to get fucked in a heist movie for you to enjoy it. That's always going to be my thing with this.
Yeah.
So apparently British people do not like his accent. They think it's really, really bad. A really bad Cockney accent.
Don Cheadle?
I think it's one of those things.
I don't know why I thought you meant Jared Harris. Like, I
no, Jared really Harris is very much British. That would be
Don. Don Cheadle's accent is hated.
Oh,
a lot.
I always thought it was good. I always thought like his accent was good. I didn't think it was critically regarded as good. But I was like, that's what I was saying. I was curious if the British movie going public didn't like it.
I thought part of the intrigue is that it's just goofy as hell, right? Like, he's just like, he's a very overly like satirical type of like British fucking, what's his like technical name? What do they call that part of the heist, man? Ammunitions guy?
Something like that. Like Bash or something. Oh, fuck, what was it? Something like that, yeah. Well, his name's Basher, right?
Bombasta General is Jar Jar Binks.
Bombad General.
Bombad General, there you go, yeah.
Yeah, no, but I always enjoyed it. That was a funny one. And seeing Jared Harris for 5 seconds, especially, I want to rewatch Chernobyl again.
Well, how about Topher Grace? Topher Grace, yeah. The first 5 minutes of the movie. Yeah.
Ooh, trashing his apartment.
With the Frankie Muniz comment. Like, you hit all Frankie Muniz on me.
Yeah, that didn't get dated.
Imagine being Frankie Muniz, like, oh, man. Hell yeah. Love a good ensemble cast. Can't wait to go see the new Oceans movie. 10 minutes in, just gets destroyed.
And Frankie Muniz is what, like 19 at the time?
If that, it was 2004. I think, pretty sure fucking Malcolm in the Middle is still in syndication.
Yeah, but I mean, definitely Malcolm in the Middle is still going on. But I thought it was that Frankie Muniz like was a little bit older than, I think, because he's like 32 now.
Something like that. Let me look it up. He is also criminally horny online. Did you see that tweet?
I don't want to shame him for that.
No. There's no shaming here. I'm just, it's noting and observed.
Criminally
fact.
Horny.
Look, there's lots of crimes that I don't think you need to be ashamed of. Being criminally, being just saying, as a note of like qualifying the amount of horny he is, it is criminal.
Frankie Muniz was born in 85.
Damn, dude.
So yeah, he was 19 when this movie came out.
Mm-hmm. He's just taking a ricochet shot in a major motion
picture.
He's
going to see a movie and he gets fucking...
The 10th highest grossing movie of an entire year just shits on you in the opening 5 minutes.
What if he did fuck up hotel rooms? That was just a well-known thing throughout the industry. Like, oh, Frankie Muniz is going to bring his RC cars in this room and just demolish the whole thing.
Just wreck the place up. He had fucking trashed off Zima and just murder the place. Poor fucking Rust. Why'd he buy a hotel? I always feel like he's a smart character, and then he gets into like one of the worst businesses you could possibly get into.
He does. He's the biggest. That's the other thing I didn't like Rusty's character. I thought Rusty was not quite as cool. Like, Rusty's the slick guy that's always one step ahead, and he doesn't fuck up.
You knew too much about him.
All he did was fuck up in this.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you just knew too much about him.
Yeah, I guess that's also true.
He needs to be asexual.
I also want him with hair. I don't like when he has the buzz cut. Not a fan. Except in Mr. and Mrs. Smith. Mr. and Mrs. Smith is the lone exception there. That was a good buzz cut. Man, that was like the same year too, right? 2004, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, or 2005?
2005, I want to say.
Let's see. I like that movie a lot.
Yeah, dude. I love watching a relationship ruin.
Just get destroyed. 2005, yeah, good call. Man, I like that one. I want to watch that again. Remember Adam Brody?
The other thing I want to note is the hologram. The hologram Eddie Izzard makes fucking sucks.
It is trash.
It looks like garbage.
I don't even think, like, at that time, a hologram would be possible.
Right?
Like that. Like, it would need a huge power brick.
Yeah, I mean,
like you had just this Xbox, the original Xbox sized external power brick.
Well, what's the most impressive holograph you saw recently? Like the Tupac one, probably, or like the Adam Levine one in Popstar?
Could you even do a holograph that simple now?
I don't, not like portable. I don't think they had a whole ass fucking stage put together for that last one.
Yeah, they didn't. Yeah.
But the hologram of Tupac, well, yeah, that was like a glass thing. I'm talking like a free, like, I don't, have I ever seen just a freestanding three-dimensional hologram?
Man, I sure haven't.
I did like that Nagel said Rusty dresses like a gigolo. I laughed at that line when he kept insulting him on the phone.
Yep.
And tell him that he dresses like a gigolo. I thought that was pretty good. He comes in for 13 if they fly him in. So does the high roller that taunts the Night Fox inadvertently. He comes in with the high roller guys from Asia.
Yep, that's right. I like that. I kind of, the one bit in the beginning of it that did make me laugh for a second was the palm reader part, which I forgot about.
Yes.
Where like she doesn't see like the cops or Benedict coming in with the two large adult twins.
You don't get enough of Elliot Gould. Not enough Ruben. Not enough Elliot Gould. Not enough of Gould. Mr. Geller. There are still a lot of enjoyable things. Like, I know I gave it a 67. It's well made. It looks fucking great. Like, it's got the great Soderbergh style on it. Mm-hmm. One of his better looking movies, I think. But just the story can't get out of the way of itself, essentially, in my opinion. I think you just did a little too much. Because even some of the lines are funny. There's a line that stuck out to me that I laughed at. Like, just there's some of the small banter that like makes that cast work so well. When they're talking about the guy that they first steal from, he's like, he opens a second floor window now and then, and someone asks, like, what does that mean? And they just hear in the background, they're like, well, it means he opens a second floor window now and then. So it's just them just ribbing on each other, being assholes. Do you like Virgil and Turk going back and forth.
They very were, problematic insults.
Who? Yeah. Well, whatever. 2004. whatever. But that actually is another fact from Ocean's movie. I really like Casey Affleck and Scott Gunn. I think they're perfect in this. That was supposed to originally be Owen Wilson and Luke Wilson.
Ooh.
In Ocean's 11. And then they cast the Coen brothers. And then they were going to cast them, and then they cast Casey Affleck and Scott Conn. I wouldn't have liked it if it was Luke Wilson and Owen Wilson.
Yeah, I think I like the combo of the Scott Conn and Casey Affleck one way better. Is that why you said RC car before, Trill? Because of the RC car bit?
No. I just know Frankie Muniz likes driving cars.
Mm. Like, Casey Affleck has that kind of buttoned up, like, nerdy look, and Scott Conn, he's kind of shorter. Yeah, they work well. What
Scott
else?
Conn hasn't been anything in a while, I feel like.
What else? Well, was he in the Hawaii 5-0 show, right?
Was he in?
That's still on TV. I didn't realize that.
I was trying to remember. I thought he was in Las Vegas, the show, but that was his dad. Great. I like Las Vegas, the show. Josh Duhamel, other people. Like, not terrible. I used to watch that when I'd come home from school.
There are other people in that show. I think that's it. I don't know. It's like I didn't care about Lamarck as much as the movie wanted me to, right? You know, I didn't care about that story. It's tough. It just doesn't bring what made the first one great. And I guess it doesn't have to be in a casino, but the heist, like the main thing, I think just needed to be bigger, and all the other stuff kind of got in the way of that working. It's not awful. It's just not good. And the biggest thing here is it's a letdown. Like, yeah, I'm not going to let the letdown take off like 20 or 30 points, because my feelings after this were like, I want to give it a 0 because I was so bummed, but like there are plenty of good elements in it, but the story itself is just, it's tough. It doesn't quite hit for me. Mm. I do want to read. I was looking up theories and explanations for things, and I came across this website. It's called Andrew's New Blog, home of the bizarre rant. And someone went on a rant about Ocean's 12. Okay. It actually has a lot of comments, but I want to read what he says to people who don't like Ocean's 12.
Oh boy.
I sent you guys a little piece of this earlier. I am sick, sick, sick of people all over the internet talking shit about the fantastically intricate and rewarding experience that is Ocean's 12, the sequel to 2001's Ocean's 11. Yes, I'm talking to you. Common accusations leveled by stupid people at Ocean's 12. An excuse to get the celebrities back together.
Extremely 2006 internet writing, by the way.
2016.
What? Ooh.
Yeah. I didn't understand what was going on. The twist ending makes the whole movie pointless. Too many new and or insignificant characters. It continues. These complaints are all wrong, and everybody who believes them is just too stupid to understand the story. Yes, I said it. The movie is genius. Ooh. You are stupid.
Okay. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
I think I am stupid.
It's a fact. And, me too.
Yeah. And it's like a whole list. Like, the whole film is about people being conned. He's like, even the audience is conned. I'm like, that's not great, though.
That's, conned into thinking it'd be as good as the first one, maybe.
I don't love that.
Roasted.
I did kind of like Linus getting conned in that meeting with Matsui, where they fuck with him just to get him to stop asking to come to meetings. And then his mom calls it, like, the Lost in Translation at the end. That was a good little part.
I feel like his character changed a lot, too.
He did.
The Linus character.
Linus was the one character they played up on the tropes of Linus more than any of the other ones.
Yeah.
Like, the cliches of Linus from the first, they played up on more, and he made his character kind of annoying.
Yeah, they dialed it up to 10. Like, he went from, like oh, cool, he's, like, the kind of, like, the eyes of how we get to see into the operation of, like, a thief world, and now it's, like, he's just an asshole, and, like, I don't like him anymore. He's a nerd.
They all kind of, they fell back to what they were before, though, in the next one. Otherwise, we have it at a, what's the composite score? I gave it a 67. Audience gave it a 61. And then the two of you gave it a 60 each. Which that means the final score. Ah, oh, fuck. That was really bad calculator usage. So final score 62.
Not bad. Not buttered, though.
An average of 62. Right. That means it's right behind Limitless and ahead of Rat Race.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's where we have it at. We have it at a 62. But we're done reviewing this throwback review. So you know what that means. It's time to play the box office game.
Oh, God. Which actor or actress?
We're going to do George Clooney. We're going to, because okay. I feel like George Clooney just isn't in a ton of stuff anymore. Right? George dialed it back.
He's doing Nespresso commercials now.
Yeah, he's got a great life at home. He's got,
like, Cuomo, whatever.
He's got the Casamigos. So we're going to do George Clooney. By the way, this movie made $110 million. $110 million budget. It made $362 million worldwide.
Wait, how much made it? Say it again just so I have a barometer for this.
This made $362 million worldwide. Okay. That's all. It's the only hint you're going to get here. All right, George Clooney, you guys are 4-3. We haven't done this for everyone. You guys are 4-3. You've won four times. You've lost three times. You get three strikes as a team.
Okay.
You got to guess the top five highest grossing worldwide movies from the one, the only, George Clooney.
I'm going to say my first guess is going to be Gravity, only because I just looked up how much money it made recently, and I know it made close somewhere in the realm of a billion. All right, like, you're one lower than that.
You're one for one. That is the number one highest grossing movie. And as always, I will tell you how much it's made. It made $723 million. Yeah, oh, $723 million for Gravity. It is
how did Gravity make that much? Did it do well overseas?
Highest grossing movie. It had a lot of Oscar buzz, too.
Yeah. I remember I looked it up recently because I know Ad Astra's like kind of struggling in the box office. And I was like, well, shit, how much did Gravity make? And Ad Astra only made, like, I think, $150 million or something so far. And I was like, oh, shit.
Damn, dude.
Damn, Gravity made a lot.
All right. So we got, do we think any of the Oceans franchise?
Well, 12 we said made like 300-something. And that made 700 something. So I'll say, yeah, Ocean is 12.
Okay, you're 2-2.
Okay.
2-2.
I think we got to go with, I think Ocean's 11's got to be there too.
Did it make a lot? All right.
3-3.
Oh, so
you now have
baby.
The top three. You have Gravity, Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12.
Did he do any animated movies?
I think Ocean's 13's there too. I'm looking through the filmography.
Is that a guess?
Yeah, do it.
Okay, you're 4-4. You have three strikes. You have three guesses for the last one. You have the number 1, 2, 3, and 5. You're missing number 4.
Ooh.
You're missing 4.
Oh.
I can tell you what it's not. It's not Hail Caesar or The Ides of March.
Yeah, well, not, I guess that.
It's not Leatherheads, right?
It's not. You know what? I won't. Wait, is that an actual guess?
No.
No, I will. No, that doesn't count. Leatherheads is his fourth lowest grossing movie he's ever been in.
Is it not Tomorrowland, the hit movie?
Tomorrowland? Is that a guess?
No, it's not actually a guess. I was joking. It's definitely
you
got
to start making guesses here.
What was the storm one? Fucking Perfect Storm. That's my guess.
You guys going to agree on a guess?
It's got to be the Perfect Storm. That movie's huge, and that was a time when only three movies were released every year.
5-5. You got all five.
Boom. Oh,
first try. First time you've done that.
That was pretty easy.
Yeah, but I
don't know. That's why I was so confused.
I didn't think you'd get Perfect Storm.
I was really looking around for an animated one because I was like, if he did any animated one, it probably made at least like $200 million.
Number 6, Batman and Robin.
Really?
Number 7 is Tomorrowland. That's 6 and 7, and those bombed in comparison to what people wanted them to do at their studios. Descendants is number 7, Up in the Air 8, 9, Burn After Reading 10, The Monuments Men. The Monuments Men was an incredibly disappointing movie.
Yeah, I remember that. That was not fun.
That was a
World War II movie. Shit, this is gonna be awesome.
I mean, the cast: George Clooney, Matt Damon, Bill Murray, Cate Blanchett, John Goodman, Bob Balaban.
Three Kings was pretty good. I'm looking through his filmography now.
Jean Dujardin was in that, the guy that won Best Actor for The Artist.
Mm-hmm.
Haven't heard from him much.
Siriano wasn't bad. I thought it was okay.
His lowest grossing movie was, I just had it, The Good German.
The Good German? What the
fuck? Solaris was his third lowest grossing movie.
Well, now I gotta look up The Good German.
Yeah. Okay, that's it. That was fun. Glad we talked about that. We'll take some suggestions for next week. Put your suggestions in the iTunes rating. Go rate the podcast 5 stars, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and then comment in there with what you want. That's where we're going to pull them from. We had some people comment Ocean's 12. That's where we pulled it from. That's what we did. Joker later on in the week. Very excited to talk about that. That is going to be a long review. That is going to be – Robbie Fox will be in. Robbie Fox watching Kingsman for the first time right now. He didn't know Mark Hamill was in it. He's very happy.
Mm-hmm. Good time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Surprised you hadn't seen Kingsman. So he's going to be on for Joker. Anything else before we leave here?
No, I've been watching the Colts game. I'm surprised it's still so close, folks. That's been talking football.
I mean,
people still drinking LaCroix?
Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. Probably. I feel like they did hit that, like a Zenith or whatever, like a year ago. But I haven't heard a lot from LaCroix recently.
You remember when Zenith used to make TVs?
Yeah, I had one of those. It's not good.
They should like bring back Magnavox, bring back Zenith, bring back all the CRT manufacturers, the old TV brands.
I'm gonna get a compact TV or compact computer again. Man, my compact stunk too. I did not like my electronics.
Do you think people ever start getting CRT TVs like to watch again, like in the same way people listen to vinyl? Because like I do think like older movies may look better on them.
I do not think that's true. I just do not think there's any way it looks better on a CRT at all.
You never know.
I don't even know how I'd be able to like plan setting up like an apartment now with like a tube TV instead of a flat screen.
You need to like you need like two people to carry a 24-inch TV.
Yeah, exactly. Those are the days. I used to have a giant tube TV that I played Gears of War on, and man, the resolution was bad. It was not good.
Get the fucking ESPN logo burned in the bottom.
Yep. Oh yeah. Oh yeah, the Fortnite thing is burned into my old TV, my old flat screen one.
Nothing like leaving your game on and your
health bar,
dad or someone being like, "Please turn that off." I now see the Madden pause screen when I'm watching TV.
Seared into the TV, extra crispy.
Anything else? Any Succession predictions? Spoiler for Succession is happening right here. I'm about to go watch it. Very excited.
Oh, is it on right now?
Yeah, the end of last episode was. I had no idea that was coming.
I'm going to say...
With his brother just fucking dropping the hammer.
I don't think Logan dies. That's my guess.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I think night shit's going to hit the fan. And yeah, shit's definitely going to hit the fan.
Damn, dude. How do you say something so brave yet controversial? That's nuts.
I don't know which way to take it. Because like part of me thinks that shit's going to hit the fan.
Is shit going to hit the fan?
And then the shit's just going to hit the fan and they're going to have to deal with it. And then shit's going to hit the fan so hard and the full resolution won't come by the end of the season. They'll have to pick back up with the third season.
Damn, that's jarring.
Some sort of cliffhanger of some sort.
What a shock.
We were going to do, Bust in the Pub, but should we do Meatloaf?
No, we have to do Bustin'. We have to. Meatloaf will be the first outro song for November.
Okay.
Paradise by the dashboard light. It's all coming back. It's all coming back to as me now.
I mean, that was a Springsteen.
Hoboken Joe.
All right, for Ken Jack Control, make sure you see the Joker.
Head and shoulders.
Talk to you on Thursday.
Have a good week at the box office.
feel good.